Hare Krishna. I welcome you again to our private and unofficial seminar we're having in this rather isolated place. And the topic of this seminar, which is continuing today and we'll finish it tomorrow at the same time, same place here. So this seminar is about a form of the Lord that is very difficult to remember and very easy to forget. Although this form of the Lord is always with us, all around us, and that form is death. So you may know in the Mahabharata that Maharaj Yudhisthira is quizzed by Yamaraj. Yamaraj asks him a series of very interesting questions to which Maharaj Yudhisthira replied very nicely, very correctly, and very profoundly. And the penultimate question, everything was building up to a point, and that point was that Yamaraj wanted to know, what is that thing that is most, a word that we find in Bhagavad Gita also, ascharya. Ascharya means amazing. So, Yudhisthira Maharaj's answer is that the most amazing thing is that in this world, at every moment, all around us, countless living entities are meeting their death. Of course, if one just listens to radio or sees TV or looks in newspaper, one will read of so many people dying. Just before, a few minutes ago, Murari Gupta Prabhu, where I'm staying, he gave me a piece from the newspaper, English, British newspaper. So his headmaster of his school, when he was in England, had died. He was a famous person. So there was some big story in the Times of London about this person. So among the human species, yes, at every moment, countless in this world are dying, but not only human beings, all around us. Just like yesterday you found this big centipede in my house when he was sweeping. In Bengali, they call it biche. So there's karkara biche, which is the scorpion. Karkara means crab. It's like a crab. It has these. That's a scorpion. And the centipede with the many legs, also very poisonous, is called simply biche. So these must be killed. Like Bhagavatam says, snakes and scorpion, these kind of poisonous creatures have to be killed. So Martanta Prabhu very quickly dispatched of our little friend, and we left him for the ants. So there you see. You see death. All around us. So Maharaj Yudhisthira said, most amazing thing in this world is that death is all around us at every moment. But each individual is thinking, I will live forever. He's making no... Of course, we may theoretically acknowledge, yes, someday I will die. But you see the way people live their lives. They don't live their lives that way. They make plans on and on and on, you know, into an unforeseeable future. I'll do this next year, and in 5 years I'll be doing that, and 10 years I'll be doing... And we don't know if we will live to take the next breath, you see. So people do not, and certainly they do not plan their lives for what is waiting for them beyond death. You see, most people have no provision for that. So this means, just like we were saying the other day, Parshati na Parshati, this Bhagavatam verse, that people see, anyone can see death all around us, and as Prabhupada said, we know that our Grandfather died, grandmother died, mother and father, if they are not already dead, they will die. And what does that mean for us? Huh? We will also die, surely, just like all of our forefathers died. So Pashyati, that you can see. Go to a graveyard, so many stones there. In some countries I've seen, Orthodox Christian countries, when people die, they put the notice. You see the notice on the buildings and the doors of apartments. You see, so you just walk down the street and you see so many notices of death have taken place everywhere. And there's a story of a woman came to Lord Buddha. She had her dead child. Her baby had died and she was very unhappy. So she approached the Buddha. "I have heard you are a great saintly person with powers. So I'm begging you, please bring my child back to life." And Buddha Dev said, "Yes, that I can do. But what I need is that you collect some mustard seeds from a house where no one has died." "Oh, all right." So then she went. And she was knocking on doors. "Please, if there has been no death at this house, give me some mustard seeds." But every door they were saying, "Well, we would love to give you mustard seeds, but last year, mother died. Next house, our sister died 5 weeks ago. Uncle died last month." You see, like this. He couldn't find any place where she couldn't find any place where there was no death. And so that gave her some enlightenment. After so many houses, then she returned to the Buddha. And he said, "So, did you get the mustard seeds?" And she said, "Oh, never mind the mustard seeds. I realize that everyone in this world must die, including myself. So I need a real solution to that problem." So, Pashyati we can see, but na Pashyati. Most people, while seeing, they don't see. Because it doesn't change their life in any way. Just like ordinarily, if we see a danger, if you go into your room to take rest, you open the door and look inside and you see a big cobra snake in the center of the room. So that's going to change your plan, you see. you were planning to roll out your sleeping bag and just take rest, but you quickly formulate a different plan if you see a big cobra sitting there. So the cobra of death, the snake of death is there waiting for all of us, but most people, they do not change their plan. They go on. So I wanted to, yes, we started with this song, Bhaja Hure Mana, so I want, at this point we can hear the translation, because this is a very nice poetic illustration of the points I've just been making. O bhaja ho re mana shri nanda nandana o bhaya charana ravindu re durabha manava janama satsange taruha e bhava sindure. O mind, just worship the lotus feet of the son of Nanda, which makes one fearless. Having obtained this rare human birth, cross over this ocean of worldly existence by associating with saintly persons. Yes? Dulaba Manava Janami, very difficult to get this human form of life. Again, one just has to look around and see all the lower species that surround us, microbes, bacteria, insects, blades of grass, trees. So birds, so many, many, many of these kinds of creatures. And so that means there's spirit souls are passing through these forms of life. But when it comes time for them, when they have exhausted the vikarma that has put them in these lower species, and now it is time for them to take a human birth, but there's not much opportunity. Because comparatively, human beings are so much less. It's like in the communist times, when one wanted to get an apartment or a car, a nice, what is it, sirena in Poland.
No more.
No more, of course. But or what was that? Polona?
Polonis.
Yeah. Polonis, yeah. So in the good old days, one might have to wait 10 years to get such a worthless car. Or some apartment with paper-thin walls. So like that, the birth in the human form is not readily available. So that's why it says Durlabha. Durlabha Manava Janma. Very difficult. And even more difficult, satsanga. So consider how much in this world, how much less satsanga is available to the people. So, therefore, Govindadas is praying to his mind, and we will talk about the mind in this session. He's praying to his mind, you've got these opportunities. You have a human birth, and you have the chance for satsanga. So take this seriously. Tarohai bhava sindure. Because there is a point to this life, and that is to cross over the bhava sindhu, this ocean of birth and death. The world is like an ocean. This life is like an ocean with great waves tossing up and down and up and down, and we are caught in these waves. Sometimes raised up, yes, there's nice, relatively high human birth or exalted birth, but then plunged down in the next second. So this is the position. So the human birth affords opportunity to cross over this. That is the mission. So he's praying, then take advantage. This Manava Janama and Satsanga. Shita Atapa Bhatta Parishana Edina Jamani Jagire Vipala Sevanu Kripana Durajana Chapalasukha Laba Lagire. Day and night I remain sleepless, suffering heat and cold, wind and rain. For a bit of flickering happiness I have vainly served wicked and miserly men. And now this, he's pointing out the danger. There's a great advantage. Hare Krishna. There's a great advantage in the human form of life, as we have just described. But there's a great danger also. And the great danger is asatsanga, illusory association. Kripana durajana, very nicely put here. Kripana means miserly person. Again, this is the point, that the human form of life is offering us a great advantage. But a miser never utilizes the good opportunity, the wealth, or whatever good thing he's been gifted with in life. He just wants to cling onto it, not use it. You see? He just wants to possess it. And in that way, well, it's hard to say what his idea is if he doesn't use the thing. So we have this human form of life, but Kripana doesn't want to use it for what it is meant for. And Durajana, because he won't take satsanga, then he comes into crooked association. Vipala Sevanu, association means seva, service. Whoever we associate with, we serve. And Vipala means no fruit. So when one falls into bad association, one is doing the same thing as the devotees do, more or less. And that we come together, we speak, we hear, we eat together. These are all the aspects of association, revealing one's mind. You know, the six exchanges of love. These things go on. But vipala, there's no fruit, because there's no Krishna consciousness. And so then, what is the goal of such type of illusory association? Chapalasukha, flickering happiness. Like when you try to pick up water or very fine sand in your hand, what happens? It runs out through your fingers. So, sukha is there, some pleasure is there, but As soon as one is trying to grasp it, enjoy it, it's running out, it's gone. This is the meaning. Chapalasukha. And in pursuance of this Chapalasukha, Shita Atapa Vatta Parijana, Edina Jamini Jagade, so many unpleasant circumstances one is having to endure. Sleepless nights, mind beset with so many plans, suffering heat and cold, wind and rain. This is material life. So then Govindadas preaches to his mind, Edana Yovana Puja Parijana. Putra parijana, etike achi paratite kamala dala jala jivana talamala bajahu hari paraniti re. What assurance of real happiness is there in all one's wealth, youth, sons, and relatives? This life totters like a drop of water in a lotus petal. Therefore, you should always worship the lotus feet of Lord Hari. And how to do that? Shravana kirtana smarana vandana parasevana dasyare pujana sakijana atmani vedana govinda dasa abilasare. Govinda das longs to hear the glories of Lord Hari, chant his glories constantly, remember him, offer him prayers, serve his lotus feet, become his servant, worship him, serve him as a friend, and completely offer him his very self. So, with that as our introduction, today I want to speak about the mind. Cultivating Krishna consciousness in the mind by these processes that we've heard, Shravana Kirtana, Smarana Vandana, Parana Sevana, Dasyare, etc. So, in the previous class we had, I was telling you that this life that we have, it's a lesson. It's an opportunity for learning. Learning, yes, the supreme knowledge, the ultimate knowledge of Krishna consciousness. And as when we go to school, we're taking lessons day by day. And at the end, there's an examination. This examination, final exams it's called. So this examination is to test whether you've actually learned anything. What have you learned? You sat here in the lecture hall every day, you heard, you may have taken notes, but how much went into the mind, in other words? You see? Isn't it? And when you go to school, that's really what is being tested. You may be there, you may be a good student, come to class every day, very nice, but if nothing is retained in the mind, and on examination day, when everyone hands in their paper, your paper is blank, like your mind, then, you see, one has failed. So the examination in this life is death. That's the final exam. And what is being tested by death is the state of the mind. Srila Prabhupada gave a very nice illustration of this. Just what I've been, this example I give of going to school. He gave a very nice illustration of a parrot. You can teach a parrot to chant Hare Krishna. And I've seen such a, not exactly parrot, another kind of bird, cockatoo, in New Zealand. Now it died. The last time I was there, they told me it died, but a few years ago I went there. White cockatoo, looks like a parrot, has a kind of crest on its head. And this parrot, or this bird, chanted Hare Krishna and said Hari Bol and Jai Prabhu. It was very funny. So yes, you can teach such a bird to chant. But Prabhupada said, what sound will the bird make if it is caught in the mouth of death? For example, if a cat, cats are very fond of eating birds. They can catch a bird, they're very happy. So if such a bird, speaking bird, is caught by a cat, do you think that that bird will chant Hare Krishna then? Very unlikely. You see? Very unlikely. It will very likely revert to its, you know, original squawking sound. So that means that Krishna consciousness, the holy name, was not actually absorbed deeply into the mind of this creature. So that's the examination. What to remember at the time of death? Antakali smarameva. Krishna says, at the time of death, if one remembers me, then one will come to me. So, this is why in today's talk we are focusing on the mind. I told you also in the last class that death is a form of Krishna. He declares this in Bhagavad Gita. Mrityu sarva harashchaham. I am all devouring death. So really, the lesson to be learned is to see Krishna as death. If we learn to see Krishna in that way, that means when death will come to us, then we will certainly chant Hare Krishna. Because we will be seeing Krishna coming to us. And this is just how Prabhupada explained this point. He gave the example of his own life still in his Purva ashram, his Grihastha ashram in Calcutta during the Second World War. So Calcutta is on the east side of India here, Bengal. And the Japanese, who were at war with England, and England was ruling India. So the Japanese had invaded Southeast Asia as far as Burma. Burma is the country east of India. And so they could fly their bombers from Burma to Calcutta. And so sometimes they were coming to bomb the city of Calcutta. So Srila Prabhupada reminisced in one lecture. You know, Prabhupada had this name since he was a little boy, Chakuri Mukhi. He loved chakuris, kachuris, this pastry. Kachuri Mukhi. So his wife had made him kachuris. And he was sitting and taking. And then the air raid siren sounded, and you could hear the planes coming. And everyone was scattering. Everyone was running to the shelter to get out of the way of the explosions. But Prabhupada was eating kachuris. So he just stayed and kept eating. And then the bombs were falling. And Prabhupada, in the lecture, he made it. I can't do this. But he made the sound. It was very nice to sound of the falling bomb, and then he made like this on the podium, and with a microphone, he made a loud boom sound. So he's making this whistling sound, like that. The bombs were coming down. And Srila Prabhupada, he kept taking kachuris, and he was looking out, and he said that at that time I was seeing the Lord's universal form. Seeing the flashes, explosions, and smoke, and devastation. So Srila Prabhupada was seeing Krishna, even in that dangerous position. So this is Krishna consciousness. This is Krishna consciousness. And this is the test waiting for everyone. So I was mentioning also in the last class, reading from the Bhagavatam, Lord Kapila Dev is advising us one should not see death as horrible. And I mentioned how in the Western world, traditionally, going all the way back to the ancient Greeks, which is considered to be the foundation of Western culture, European culture, the ancient Greeks, So in the traditional religion of ancient Greece, where they were worshipping the different demigods, and all the, you know, philosophy, the great ideas comes from out of that. And there were two great poets of this ancient religion, Homer and Hesiod. So Homer has written that Achilles, the hero Achilles, he came back from death and he spoke to another hero, Ulysses. And in their conversation, Ulysses wants to know from Achilles about death, because Achilles has died. And Achilles said, "Oh, please don't make me talk about this." He said, "All I want to say is this, that it is better to be in this life." The term as translated into English is, even if you are in thrall. So in thrall, the word thrall means to be under the power of another, and particularly the power of illusion. In other words, it's just a fancy way of saying being in Maya. And in this statement, Achilles actually says, it's better to be in Maya and yet be alive in this body. To be under the grip of, you know, fate and the material nature and other controllers. And you see, that's what material life means, to be under the control of others. But at least you're in a body. At least you can enjoy this world. So it's better to be in that situation than to be the king of the ghosts. This is referring to himself. I don't have a body, I'm just shade. I'm just a shade, you know, a ghost. And in the ghostly world, I'm considered very great because I was a hero. But what's the use? I can't do anything. So this is the tradition. And it's still there in the Western world. Why Western world? All materialistic society, anywhere in the world, focused on this body, then they see death is horrible. But Kapila Dev, we heard, says, don't think of death this way. So death is actually Krishna. And if we are prepared for the test of meeting Krishna in that form, then we will pass his examination. So, we wanted to speak about the mind. And there's a very nice couplet of verses from the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, text 29. These are verses 76 and 77. And this is spoken by the Mahajan Narada Muni. And I would like to also mention that the example given in this verse is found also in the Upanishads. This is a very classical Vedic analogy that is given here. So Srila Prabhupada's translation reads, "The caterpillar transports itself from one leaf to another by capturing one leaf before giving up the other. Similarly, according to his previous work, the living entity must capture another body before giving up the one he has. This is because the mind is the reservoir of all kinds of desires." So, what the verse is saying is that the mind is the basis. The mind is also a kind of body. The mind is also a covering of the soul. First of all, we have to say that. Just like when one is dressing. So one covers the body with two layers of clothing. There are the underclothes, which only we see, those who are wearing them. Outsiders don't see. And then there are the overclothes for everyone to see. So in the same way, we have a linga sharira, a subtle body. And only we know that. Only we know our own mind. And then on top of that, we have the stula sharira, the gross body. Everyone can see the gross body. So, what does this mean? It means that the mind, subtle body, is the base, is the foundation of the gross body. And so this verse of the about the caterpillar, it's giving the image, like you can see out here in the garden in the Gurukul, so many leafy plants. So if a caterpillar is crawling along one leaf, comes to the edge, and then nearby there's another leaf. And so the caterpillar desires to go from one leaf to the other. So you know, it's obvious how he has to do it. Keeping the back part of his body here, then he, probably you've seen this, they stick their heads out, the front part of the body, and they kind of, you know, go like this. And then, here it is. And then they cross. So the caterpillar has to bridge the two leaves. So like that, the subtle body, the mind, has to build a bridge from this body that we're in now to the next body. And that it is doing by its cultivation of desire. The Rig Veda tells us that desire, kaam, is the root of the mind. And that is very elaborately explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said that the Vedic literature, it's like yogurt. And then Shukadev Goswami has churned that yogurt and gotten butter. And the butter is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that means the Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of the Vedic literature. So in the Rig Veda we find this statement that desire is the seed or the root of the mind, and Bhagavatam gives a very elaborate explanation of that. So what do we do with this mind? We are cultivating desire. The mind is compared in Bhagavatam to a garden or the heart. Actually, the mind is situated in the heart. And projected up into the brain, but its actual location is the heart. And the heart or mind is like a garden. And in this garden, there are so many seeds. So then, in this life, in this human life, we are cultivating certain seeds. There are many, 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 many possible potential desires in the mind. And in one lifetime, one cannot possibly cultivate all of them. So then, according to the particular combination of modes of nature that we like, that we have attraction to, we have taste for in this life, then we are cultivating certain desires, you see, under the influence of the modes of nature. So just like somebody, he likes to sleep. He just, like Prabhupada told about people he used to see in Calcutta, working in offices, these office messenger boys, office wallahs. And so the boss sends them out on some job, you know, go across town to see Mr. So-and-so and pick up from him something and bring it back here, like that. So they're always going to and fro. And Prabhupada was saying how there's this big park in central Calcutta where there's this Victoria Monument, a very wonderful looking building from the British times. And in this park, there are many benches, like in any park, you see benches where people can sit. So these office wallahs, when they get the chance, after they do their work, and if there's some time left over, if boss expects them back at such and such time, but they have 1-2 hours left, then they'll go to this bench and they'll lay down and go to sleep. You see? And Prabhupada was kind of joking, saying, and they think they're actually getting something from the, you know, it's like, oh, this is very nice. It's like a very, you know, a big plus in their day that they can have 2 hours to sleep in the sun on the park bench. This is like, oh, you know, as if they were getting extra pay or something. So this represents a kind of taste. You see, there are people who have that taste. That if there's a chance to sleep, you see, they work 5-6 days a week, but on the last day, the day off, Saturday, Sunday, 1-2 days, they don't have to go to work. So, oh, yes, then let me sleep. You see? Why do I have to get up at 6 in the morning? Let me sleep. Long, long hours, you see, into the... Just like there was a famous movie actress in Hollywood. She was a big star, the number one actress in the 1940s. Her name was Rita Hayworth. She was before Marilyn Monroe, all these that you may have heard of. She was actually the first big female star, the first one they ever called superstar. This term was invented for Rita Hayworth. She was so famous that during the Second World War, they used to sell records of her heartbeat. The GIs, you know, the soldiers, would just listen to Rita Hayworth's heartbeat. So she was once interviewed by a reporter. Now she is the most famous, beautiful woman in the world. And so the reporter said, "So you are Rita Hayworth, the lovely Rita Hayworth. What do you think when you get up in the morning and you go into the bathroom and look in the mirror and see yourself? What is in your mind when you see yourself in the morning?" She looked at him and said, "Honey, I don't get up until the afternoon." So there are people like that, you see. If there's a chance to sleep, they take it. So this means their taste is leaning towards the mode of ignorance. So that type of desire they'll cultivate. Sleep, 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 sleep. And then there are people whose taste goes to the mode of passion. They think sleeping is a waste of time. Let me get up. Let me work. Go out there. Get something. Get some money. You see? Get some name and fame. Get some position. And then there are people in the mode of goodness. And their taste is for reflection, philosophy, poetry, like that, going into the deeper questions of life. But all three are conditioned. They're under the modes of nature. And so in this way, we cultivate desires in our mind. You see? And that means in this body, the mind is like the caterpillar, going out, feeling, and this is what I like. You see? The next leaf. Ah, yes, this is for me. And then going ahead. And so that means what the desires that we have cultivated in this life, they naturally lead us to the next body. You see? It's a very, very clear, simple example given here in the Bhagavatam. So, then we can see this, the application of this in spiritual life also. You see? If we want to go back home, back to Godhead, if that is our hope, then also that is a cultivation of the mind and the mind's desires. But these are spiritual desires. And spiritual desires... to cultivate spiritual desires, then that is hinging on spiritual association. Prabhupada, speaking of the mind, he compared it to crystal. There's also in the Bhagavatam this example is given. Like a piece of crystal, quartz crystal. That is clear, like glass. But if we were to place such a clear crystal on this surface, which is very dark, very dark brown, then how would it appear? It would also appear dark brown. And that's because of association. You see, so the mind is like that. What we associate with, the mind takes on that quality. So when we're in the under the modes of nature, yes, then we find some association according to the modes of nature. And we think, this is for me. But to cultivate Krishna consciousness, we have to seek out spiritual associates. We have to associate with devotees. And this may not be so much according to the taste of the mind. And that's why spiritual life is austerity. You see? Because the mind, its long conditioning, makes it inclined to associate with the modes of nature. So then one has to, using the intelligence, push the mind to keep it in spiritual association. And in this way, we will be able to cultivate our original spiritual desire. And the main means of this cultivation in that association, satsanga, is hearing. In the Gita, 13th chapter, Anyetveva Janta, Shrutvaneva Upasate, Tepi Chachitranteva, Mrityus Shruti Parayana. This is a very nice verse. Anye means others. Krishna has previously been speaking of different kinds of persons who are aspiring for spiritual advancement, and they take up yoga, they take up meditation, austerity. But then he says there are others, and who are ajanantaha. It means they are not blessed with very much spiritual inclination, spiritual knowledge. But anyetvema majananta shrutva nyebu pasate, still by hearing shrutva, you see, still they take up association with transcendentalists. And they hear from them. This is their qualification. Then, Shrutvan Yebo Upasati. And by such hearing, they take up the path of upasana, which means worship of the Supreme Lord. So, Krishna says, they too will cross over birth and death simply by hearing. So, this is essential. Actually, you see, in any path of spiritual life one may take up, hearing must be essential, because any path you take up, whether it's yoga, jnana, this, that, you have to hear about it. You have to have a teacher. So hearing is essential. So then the essential hearing, according to the Bhagavatam, the sar, this term is used. The sar means the essence, like you, the juice, like an orange or a mango, when the juice is squeezed out. So you get all the goodness in that fruit, but in a liquid form. That's called sar. So Bhagavatam says, the essence of all hearing, of all topics to be heard in this world, is Krishna. Even the mundane topics, they're just a kind of shadow or eclipsed form of Krishna Katha. You see? When one is hearing about Krishna, we hear about his name, form, qualities, pastimes, his relationships with his devotees. So even those who are hearing mundane, about mundane personalities, movie stars, pop singers, whatever, they're hearing the same basic topics. But they're not hearing about the Purna Tattva, the Supreme Absolute Truth. They're hearing about a perverted reflection of the Absolute Truth. But the same basic subject is attractive to everyone. So, Bhagavatam says, that this hearing about Krishna, nibritta taisir upagiyamana, this is actually the nectar, the sar, the sweet juice that is relished by those who are nibritta. Nibritta means those who have no attraction to anything material, who have no taste at all. We were speaking before about how the mind has this taste to cultivate desires under the modes of nature. But one who is nibritta, he has no such taste. So, such a person, a transcendentalist, then he relishes fully, unbrokenly, the nectar of Krishna Katha. This is the happiness, to simply hear and chant about Krishna. So then one may say, oh, well, I'm not like that. I'm sorry, I'm not nibritta. Okay, yes, to hear about Krishna, sometimes I find it interesting. But sometimes I'm just not in the mood. Sometimes I find it boring. I want to hear about other things too. So, if we find ourselves in that condition, does that mean then there is no use to our hearing about Krishna? Does that mean, like sometimes I've heard this sort of argument, well, I can't chant Hare Krishna properly. When I chant my rounds, I realize I'm not paying full attention. I see that my mind is wandering. So then why chant? You see? I go through 16 rounds every day, but I don't hear 16 rounds. If I'm lucky, I hear 4 rounds, or maybe 1 round. That means 12 rounds, 15 rounds out the window. Now what's the use? Recently, someone was making this argument to me. Maybe I should just try to chant 1 round nicely. No. Because the next line in the Bhagavatam says, Bhava aut sadach, Bhava aut sadach, Shrotamanu bhirima. So bhava means, like we were hearing from Govinda Das, the material existence, ocean of material existence, called bhava. And aushada, means medicine. So, hearing about Krishna is the medicine for those who are materially diseased. So I may have this material disease, my mind may be strongly attracted to material topics, then I should take this medicine. And you know, Rupa Goswami has given in the Upadeshamrita this exact example of one suffering from disease, of jaundice. And so in that state, when one tastes sweet, it doesn't taste sweet. One puts sweet on the tongue, but it tastes bitter because of the disease. But the cure is you eat sugar sweets. So even though it doesn't taste nice, go on eating. Okay? This is the answer to that doubt. I don't have taste for chanting 16 rounds, so maybe I should not chant 16, just chant 1, maybe. No, one should take the medicine. So the medicine tastes bitter in the beginning. We don't like it. But one should take it. Bhava ausarach. Trotta mano biramat. And then as the mind, mano means mind, so we're speaking of the mind. As the mind becomes purified, then abiramana, then the mind will become more and more attracted. But we have to take the medicine. And this is, we're talking about death, so this is the medicine for death, actually. The medicine for death, because we've already explained, what is death? Death is when the mind becomes separated from this body and takes the next body that it has been cultivating by the karma of this body. That's death. So the ultimate cure for this process of birth and death is to take a spiritual body, a deathless body, and that we cultivate in this life by taking the medicine of hearing and chanting. Then ka uttama shloka gunanuvadat puman virjeta vina pasugnat. The Bhagavatam concludes, who will not accept this solution to the problem of death? This nice answer to hear about Krishna. And the only person who will not accept is one who is pasugnat. Pasugnat means animal killer. Pashu means animal. And pashu also means soul. So a person who is an animal killer, like meat eater, he will not be able to take to this. And also one who is killing his own soul, like taking up Mayavadi philosophy, for example, something like that, which eats away at the very root of bhakti, then he'll not be able to do this. Pashugnat. So yes, there are some persons who are, Rupa Goswami uses the term achikitsya, that means incurable. Achikitsya aparadi, incurable offenders. You see, those who are beginning in Krishna consciousness, we have problems. What are our problems? One problem is that we are ignorant. Kalo Shudra Sambhava, Umapadi Maharaj, a few days ago, was speaking about that. We're all born in this age as Shudra. Shudra means ignorant. Shudra literally means one who always laments. And one is lamenting because of one's ignorance. You see, when one doesn't know what's going on, one is trying to get on in life, but when one is ignorant of how things are going, one will make mistakes. And because of mistakes, one will suffer, and because one is suffering, one will lament. So that's our position. We're ignorant, and therefore we lament. Therefore we find spiritual life a struggle. We find ourselves making mistakes. We find ourselves having fall downs. And we very often are banging our head on the wall. Why this has happened? We don't even know why. Because, again, ignorance. So that is a problem. And then weakness, even when knowledge comes. As Prabhupada says, gyan vigyan, there are two stages of knowledge. So gyan means theoretical. We know, theoretically, but we still don't know how to put it into practice. So that's weakness. So these are two kinds of difficulties. Ignorance, weakness, but I already spoke of good association, satsanga. If we get good association and we do this process of hearing and chanting in that good association, that is the aushadi, that is the medicine for curing these conditions, ignorance and weakness. But then someone who is achikitsya, incurable, his problem is, this is just like the example of the snake and the milk. The milk is good, the milk is nourishing, but if it's given to a snake, the snake drinks it and it increases his poison. So there's a certain kind of person, he may get his good association, he hears, but this hearing makes him puffed up. He gets a little bit of knowledge by his hearing, and immediately he's thinking, I'm the greatest devotee. You see? I know everything. I know better than anyone. I know better than the persons I was hearing from. I know better than my guru. I know better than the acharyas. I know better than the Bhagavatam itself. And so he gets a little bit of knowledge, and he thinks he's become some kind of maha acharya or something. And he thinks his speculations are realizations. And he thinks that everyone else should follow his so-called realizations. So you know, in the shadow of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, there are these apa sampradayas, these so-called Vaishnava sects, which have actually split away from the central branch of Lord Chaitanya's teaching. And they have become asar, they have become useless. They cannot actually yield the fruit of love of God. But in these apasampradayas, yes, there are gurus, not only gurus, there are avatars, self-proclaimed avatars. Lord Chaitanya coming again, or different associates coming again, Radha and Krishna coming again in one person. Oh, so much nonsense like this. And they have their followers. So, this is the example. These are persons, they get a little knowledge, and they become too much puffed up. Just like the founder of the Ativadi Sampradaya, Upa Sampradaya. This is in Orissa, in Jagannath Puri. So, Ativadi means too great. This is one of the 13. And how did this Sampradaya get this name, too great? This is because Jagannath Das, who is the founder of that Upa Sampradaya, he went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He got Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's darshan when Mahaprabhu was there, sannyasi. And he said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I know who you are. You are Krishna. And as for me, I am Radharani. So Lord Chaitanya looked at him and said, my dear sir, you have become Ativadi, which means you have become too great. And Lord Chaitanya very humbly said, in fact, you are so great, I cannot associate with you. And this person was so foolish that he was thinking that, yes, Mahaprabhu himself has said how great I am. And so he called his whole bogus school Ativadi. He considered Mahaprabhu's rejection to be a compliment. This shows how silly these people are. But this is the example. Ativadi. So, this makes one achikitsya, incurable. He spoils that one thing that we have to save us from our ignorance and our weakness is association. Pure association, to hear in that association. But if in that association we foolishly allow ourselves to become like this, Ativadi, too great, puffed up, thinking I'm so important, then we spoil that chance. And that means we will fail the test. Coming back again to the topic of this seminar, which is death, which is that form of Krishna that we will all meet one day, who will test us. And if we have simply learned to see Krishna as death, then that will be a very happy meeting. You see, a devotee at the time of death, Prabhupada said, is very blissful. Because what? Death means simply going back home. I said last time, Prabhupada said, it's like going to sleep for a devotee. Just going to sleep and waking up in the spiritual world. What could be more wonderful? But for someone who has not become Krishna conscious, and therefore, in the name of Krishna consciousness, has cultivated some other kind of mentality, some Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur even said, one can cultivate a perverted reflection of Krishna consciousness. The mind concocts a version, a mental version, a mental image, a false mental image of what Krishna is, Krishna's pastimes, all concoction. And that will just disappear like smoke at the time of death. That false mental, just like the parrot, again, the example of parrot. Parroting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, like that. But when the cat comes to grab it, that's the only sound. You see? So this is a great tragedy. So anyway, one can see, this is all very logical. The cure is there, to stay within satsanga, Vaishnava association, and to go on hearing. And even though the mind, because the mind has this taste to be under the modes of nature, the mind may push us, no. The mind may try to show us so many faults in this association, and you should go elsewhere, you should be more independent, you should... No, this is our austerity. We have to keep the mind in this, under this shower of mercy of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. And this way, Chetu Darpana Marjanam, the mind will become cleansed. If we follow the mind, then, you see, the mind is impure. That means we will follow the mind deeper and deeper into impurity, even in the name of Krishna consciousness. All right. So I'll stop here. And we will continue finishing up the seminar tomorrow at 3:30 in this place. Are there any questions? Yes?
What we do with our days, it means what we do our with our lives. But, this mentality that tomorrow or next week I will come serious or surrender or like that. If you do like that, it always goes further and further. You never get into the surrender. If you surrender always in this day, it's still like the proper mentality.
That's a good point. So that was, you were making a comment.
Yeah, well, it's just came to me.
No, that's a very good point. Like Prabhupada says, trust no future, however pleasant. This is the materialistic mentality, actually. To always be trusting in some better future. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his poem says, forget about the past that sleeps and do not dream of the future at all, but act in times that are with thee, and progress ye shall call. So if we act here and now in Krishna consciousness and not haunted by that, we may have made mistakes in the past, but if we allow that to haunt us, you know, to overshadow our present, you did so many wrong things in the past, how can you do anything right today? You see? And at the same time, if we're dreaming some future, well, I'm here now in South Podunk, Indiana. This is not a good place to do devotional service. But next year I hope to go to Rishikesh. And there I'll be able to do such wonderful Krishna conscious activities. You see, so like what this is your point. And one is just pushing it ever farther into the future. Prabhupada told the story of a man who was doing service, fetching water to bring to the brahmanas at Jagannath Puri for the service of Lord Jagannath. And he was always bringing the water very nicely. And sometimes the pundits would say, well, come and have darshan. And he would always make some excuse. Oh, later, later. He thought, I'm bringing water. Why do I... That's enough for me. And so they would say, come and have darshan of Lord Jagannath. And he would say, later, later, I'll do it later, later, later. And then he died. Prabhupada said, he missed the chance to ever have darshan. That's a good point.
Do we transcend the mode, like a transcendentalist? Does he transcend the modes of nature, or he also transcends the platform of the mind? Like there is this verse about Stita Dhirmuni who acts, that the thoughts are coming into the mind, but he just ignores them, like many rivers into the ocean.
Yes. This is also known as Vasudev Sattva. There is a mode of goodness, but it is transcendental. So, this Vasudev Sattva is not—it is not the highest state of transcendence. But it means one is in this body, still in touch with mind and senses, still using them, but is not influenced by them. He's aware of them, and also aware of the desires that are loaded into the mind and into the senses. Like Krishna says in the Gita, that buddhi, intelligence, and mana, mind, and indriya, senses, these are the places where lust resides, calm is residing. So he knows that, but he is not influenced by that because of having a superior satisfaction. So this is the pure state of goodness. Pure goodness means goodness that is not pregnant with rajogun, tamogun. In America, there's this joke in one's adolescence, one's growing up teenage, you always hear this joke that a father has heard from some rumor that his teenage daughter has become pregnant. And of course, she's still going to school, she's not married, and she's slim, and she's just like a girl, so he can't see that she's pregnant. But he's heard this, so then he confronts her. And he says, "I've heard you're pregnant, is that true?" And she blushes red in her face and she says, "Oh, Daddy, just a little bit." No. See? So just a little bit pregnant means wait a few months and everyone will see. You see? So like that, the material mode of goodness is pregnant with rajogun, tamogun. So that means maybe right now you're looking, oh, very nice, Panditji, Vipraji. But given some time, given, you know, the right time, right place, right circumstance, this person may become suddenly very angry and start to shout, and you see, and everyone will, wait a minute, we thought he was so, you know, so elevated, and look at him now. You see, it comes out. So this is the material mode of goodness. The lower modes are still there, hidden, but they'll come out in time. So the transcendental mode of goodness, there's no association with the lower modes. And that is when one becomes fixed, stita dhir muni, you're saying. So it's fixed in devotional service. This means in terms of the stages of advancement, anartinibriti, asakti, ruchi, asakti, like that. So anartinibriti means he has crossed over the influence of the sensuality, you see, the propensity for sense gratification. He's free of this illicit sex, gambling, intoxication, meat eating, these things. And nishta, fixed, firm faith, ruchi, he has taste, asakti, he desires to associate more and more with Krishna in the form of the holy name and the devotees. And this leads to bhava, ecstasy, and then prema, love of God. So this anartinibriti and nishta and ruchi, these stages, this is that Vasudev Sattva. Yes?
As far as I've understood, preparing for this final exam in death, which is not making plans, which is not plans. Is it like that with all the plants, or with just plants which are related to us, our body, our perverted material mentality? Since we actually have to plant something in Lord Chaitanya's mission, taught us to think big.
Yes.
Well,
you see, that's the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness, is that Krishna consciousness, it is, to use some Latin terms, it is a theology of via positiva, the positive way. There's via negativa, the negative way. Like those religions that stress, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. You see? Also in Mayavadis. Mayavadi's big don't. You see, can't do this, can't do that. But what you should do, very less. Actually, according to Mayavadi philosophy, whatever you do in this world, it's Maya. So the best thing is to do nothing at all. But no one can do nothing at all. So there's always a problem. But in Krishna consciousness, we have this transcendental alternative to everything. Everything there in the material world. Everything except envy. That's the thing. That's what has to be given up. Narottam Das Thakur, in one of his songs, Kama Krishna Seva Kamarpani Krodha Bhakta Dvesijane Lobha Sadhu Sangha Hari Kata. So Kama is mentioned, desire. Kama Krishna Seva Kamarpani. What do I want? What do I desire? Service to Krishna. That's what we should desire. Very strongly we should desire to serve Krishna. Krodha Bhakta Dvesijane. And when do I become angry? When we confront those who are envious of devotees. Then one should become angry. One should not be passive. You say, oh, someone is blaspheming a devotee and we just go, oh. Shanti. That's not good. One should become angry at such rascals. Kama, Krishna Seva Kama, Krodha Bhakti Divisi, Lobha. Lobha means greed. Huh? Kama Ajva Krishna Kamarpani Krodha Bhakti Visijan Loba Sadhu Sangha Harikata. Yes. One should then become very greedy for Harikata in the association of devotees, to hear about Krishna in the association of devotees. So in this way, lust, anger, greed, even madness, mada, become mad in ecstasy for Krishna consciousness. But not matsarya, not envy. That cannot be there, because that's the root of our, very, very root of our fall down from the spiritual world, is this enviousness. So anyway, you see, this is the wonderful opportunity in Krishna consciousness, that we have positive alternative, and we should go for that enthusiastically. So yes, make plans in Krishna consciousness. Very good. Just like in the early days in France, so Hari Vilas Prabhu was preaching there. He was the president of the first Paris temple. They were living in some very provisional place. And there was an opportunity to acquire a building, to buy a building, presenting itself. But there were some conditions attached to this that seemingly was out of the reach of the devotees at that time. So he was consulting with Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, there's a nice building available, but, you know, money that we don't have is required. And Prabhupada was saying, oh, we do not want anxiety. Our business is to preach, to serve Krishna. And we do not want to take on unnecessary anxiety. So never mind this. But this person who was making this offer to Hari Vilas was persisting. And as time went on, then the deal was looking better. So again, Hari Vilas approached Srila Prabhupada and proposed a second offer. But Srila Prabhupada again, oh, we don't want anxiety. take on such a burden, big building, such a great cost, then maintenance, never mind. And then in time, the deal got very sweet. So a third time, Harivilas went to Srila Prabhupada and offered the new version of the deal. And Prabhupada said, yes, take it immediately. And then Harivilas said, well, Srila Prabhupada, before you were saying we shouldn't accept anxiety. Prabhupada said, in Krishna consciousness, there must be anxiety. So there's a higher order of anxiety, just like gopis are anxious for Krishna. Mother Yashoda is anxious for Krishna. So when one has become strong enough to take on that anxiety, this is, you can see how Prabhupada, he was telling devotees, never mind, never mind, never mind. And then when he saw they can do it, then he said, yes, take it, and there must be anxiety. So when one has become strong enough, then one should accept even anxiety in Krishna consciousness. All right, we'll stop here. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada. Ki Jai.